You're listening to the Washington Hospitality Industry Podcast, your primary source of information related to the hospitality industry in Washington State.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome. Today, we are talking with our friends from Tip House. We're going to be talking about tip automation with restaurant members who are restaurant people who actually use the system. Before we get to that, we got a little bit of housekeeping to take care of. If you have any questions, go ahead and type them down in the Q&A. And once the conversation's over, we can get to those and answer them on air. This recording is being recorded, or this webinar is being recorded. It'll be up on our website later on today if you want to rewatch it, or if you missed part of it and you want to go back and look. Also, if you are interested in attending another webinar tomorrow at 10 a.m., we have Susan Sturholm from All Things HR. She is going to talk about sexual harassment and what every employer needs to know. She is a member of our advisory committee. As members of the Washington Hospitality Association, you are entitled to a 30-minute consultation with any one of our advisors. Just reach out to your territory manager and they can get you in touch. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and hand this over to Steve Hooper. He is with Brock Lynch from Wooden City and Kevin Egan from Hops and Drops. Good morning, everyone.
Thanks. Appreciate the tee up. Hi, everybody. My name is Steve Hooper. I'm the president of partnerships and business development here at Tip House. But prior to that, I was one of you. I was president of Ethan Stoll Restaurants up until last year. And I, like Kevin and Brock, was a user of this fine software that we're talking about. But today isn't really about selling software. It's about solving problems. And we're going to have, a great conversation with Kevin and Brock. What I love about our industry and our region is that we're all trying to help each other get better. I've called Kevin for advice on things here and there, in fact, I'm a neighbor of Brock's. This was me on Sunday with my kids at Wooden City. It's a fun community that we have here. Kevin and Brock were kind enough to spend a little time with us today and sort of share their learnings. And I would love for, the two of you to kind of give us a little background on kind of what inspired you to jump into the hospitality industry and what your journey has been.
Sure. I'll take the lead. I kind of cut my teeth, like a lot of folks in our industry, as a busser and expediter, in high school, before taking off for college. And then really built kind of like a strong backbone, I guess, in the retail sector, actually, working for Home Depot before eventually departing that. And getting back to work in hospitality, started as a bouncer and then moved my way up into bar backing, bartending, managed several bars and beverage programs, kind of done it all. Was a sales manager for House Spirits Distillery and helped grow the aviation brand at one point in time. And then eventually started working at, it was previously Shelter Lounge, but now Wooden City Tavern, where I've occupied that building for almost 10 years now. Definitely filled a lot of roles over the last nearly two decades.
Did you get to meet Ryan Reynolds?
No, unfortunately not. I departed before we sold the business to him. That would have been pretty awesome, though.
Yeah. Kevin.
Right on. So Kevin Egan with Hops and Drops Restaurants. I started similar to Brock as a busser at Red Robin when I was 16. As I started, I think they passed a law like 2 weeks later, or Red Robin did, where you had to be 18 to work there. So I bus tables and expoed for 2 years working through high school, which was a ton of fun. Learned a lot. And so grew up in that service and hospitality. And then as I got older, became a server, bartender, worked through college as a server, did a little stint in a at Suncadia out there in Cle Elum as a bellman and parked cars, which was amazing and a fun experience. And then came back, worked as a bartender at Hops and Drops in 2009. And then throughout the last 14 years, been working every single management position, bar manager, kitchen manager, general manager, did regional for a little bit, did some development, site selection. And then 3 years ago, had the opportunity to buy out the original founder and the CEO. So now I'm one of three owners and then the CEO of Pops and Drops. So it's been a fun journey. And it's like all of us, or most of us, it's in our blood. It's what we love to do. Some of us are a little crazy for doing it all the time. Steve got out, but we're still in. So it's been a fun run.
I love that, like the progression. It's like, there are a few industries where you can start at the, you know, the first job and end up running your own show and having your own thing going, which is an amazing part of our industry. And I've always loved it. I'm not too far away, Kevin. I get to still hang out with you guys. So, you know, going into sort of the topic for today, what have been some of the biggest challenges you face kind of managing tips in your businesses, and how do you address them, you know, the way you do it now?
Yeah. You know, we have seen, you know, obviously in the industry, this kind of progression from, you know, cash received tips to a lot of our tips now being placed on credit cards. And, you know, more importantly, we've just really recognized the importance of being more efficient as that progression has taken place. And, you know, in addition to that, you know, at least for us, you know, Tip House was or has been a valuable tool in managing kind of the liabilities associated with tip collection and distribution, both from, you know, a perspective of being kind of under the watchful eye of the IRS, but also, you know, as it relates to our employees and their needs with being able to report their income as well.
Yeah, to emphasize that first point, you know, as we all grew up, it used to just always be cash, and you walk out of the restaurant as a server, bartender with a bunch of cash in your pocket. And slowly over the years, it just became on the credit card. And eventually it came to a point where we were having to pay the servers, bartenders, bussers out of the house bank so that way they can walk away with the cash. And realize that that system was not going to be scalable, was not going to be something that was really safe for our managers. And it became more of a pain to be able to pay out of the house bank. So that was something that we recognized that we needed to change. And as part of the management process of it, so started, you know, implementing just tips on check. And then Tip House really helped with that process. So that way it was consistent for everybody, and everybody knew what they were going to get. And really streamline the process for the managers who used to have to enter it, and then streamline the process for the team members who are either waiting for their tip from someone at the end of the night, or don't know what you're going to get from the server or bartender at the end of the night. And so it just really streamlined the process for everybody, which was very beneficial. And then I think the last part of that was just the transparency that the servers then got, or the part of house got, was just knowing what they were going to get, knowing how much it was. So that was,
you're talking about the employee app there.
Yeah, the team member app. And it's really cool. You know, some team members, it's funny that they don't pay attention to it. It's like, oh yep, saw my check, I got my tips. Other folks dive into it. It's a daily thing that they look at. It's like, all right, this is what I earned for today. And just the difference of team members or different of people. But yeah, that has been amazing from the transparency standpoint for them, and then also from us, from a liability, hey, this is very transparent.
That's great. And I guess, you know, in terms of implementing, you know, Tip House and that tipping point, what kind of caused you to realize, hey, we can do this better, there's a better way to do this? You know, was there a specific point in time, or what kind of caused the shift from that, you know, previous model to looking for automation?
Yeah, you know, for us, at one point in time, we were using kind of like a legacy driven tip distribution system. I'm not going to drop its name necessarily, but it was implemented well with the point of sale system that we were using. And then we had made some changes during the pandemic to our point of sale systems, and that legacy system didn't work with the or didn't integrate with our point of sale any further. So we had to kind of take a step backwards, actually, and we were using manual spreadsheet entry for managing our tip distribution. And I think it probably only took one error in tip distribution before I realized like this just isn't a viable solution anymore. We were able to like save sheets and like make it transparent when we needed to. We could still, you know, disclose that kind of information. But the problem with as anyone would know, with tip distribution and entry errors and stuff like that is, you only have to screw up one time to realize that this could be a very costly mistake. And, you know, it's easy to rectify it, you know, from a, you know, just for just making it right for somebody, but the cost associated with it's pretty great. So, we realized really quickly that it was inefficient to do it manually and we were prone to error, and it just didn't make sense any further. So finding a solution that allowed us to more quickly get it done and then get managers or myself out of the office and on the floor was really the kind of the right move.
Yes, the tipping point. I see what you did there, the nice little pun. Similar to Brock, you know, is we had an Excel sheet where team member or managers entered in the information at the end of the night and then ended up doing payroll on Monday. And not that there were errors all the time, but there were errors of just data entry. And then I think, you know, a couple other things happened in the industry, you know, minimum wage increased, labor started increasing. And we were already doing a tip pool, so that wasn't anything new to us, but the industry was starting to change and shift of implementing service charges, implementing all these different elements. And so it became more complicated. And so I think the solution, or so that was part of the tipping point, is like, hey, this is very complicated. How are we going to manage through all these things? And so wanted to find a system that would help us be consistent at all of our locations. And allow us to scale. So we're growing and continue to grow. And when we started doing this, you know, you'd go ask each restaurant and everybody was pretty close to the same, but it was a little bit different. And I was like, this is not a scalable model. This is something that's not going to work as we continue to grow. So we need to find something that will be consistent, allow us to teach at each location. And as team members transferred, it was consistent for them too. So just kind of all those things combined made us realize that, hey, we need to do something different.
Makes sense. In terms of like, you know, you both kind of touched on the employee side of this and sort of their thing. As you implemented, what did you hear from team members either before, during, or after about their experience, and what were some of maybe their concerns or things that you needed to address as you kind of put this type of a system in place?
I'll head it first this time, Brock. It was mixed. And I think the team, now fast forward, it's awesome. Initially, you know, change is difficult, especially when you're dealing with people's money. It just causes people to pause. And so there was more questions and kind of checking on how much they were making. The folks who, because we were already, what we were doing previously is the exact same thing we did with the automated model or the system of Tip House. And so there really was no change. So most people just adopted it. It's like, oh, this is no problem. The folks that struggled with it were the folks that weren't necessarily following the rules on a regular basis. It's like, you know, I owe the busser $20, but I give them 5 or 10. And so it's like, hey, you're messing with my money. Well, in reality, this is what you should have been doing the whole time. So yeah, you may be making less now, but it was because you weren't doing it the right way previously. So more expose team members who weren't following the rules that we had in place or standard we had in place. And that was the biggest kind of conversation or hard piece that we had to work through. It was like, hey, it's the same exact percentage. Now it's just automated. As opposed to previously, it was like, here's $5. Well, so you owe the dude, or you owe the person $20. So that's why it's different or challenging for you.
Yeah, I mean, very similar experience for us at Wooden City. We weren't really doing anything as far as the tip pool is concerned differently. So all the metrics and everything were pretty much the same. It was just a different process of getting an end result. I think people are always kind of naturally, a little bit adverse to change, but I think something like this, where you can quickly show people that it's transparent and it's a more accurate way of distributing their income, ultimately led to it being an easily adopted tool. We really didn't see much pushback with it at all.
Makes sense. Maybe you guys, for the benefit of those that are attending, maybe walk through some of the, ways that you do distribute the tip pool in your own businesses and what that, because I always find it interesting. Different operators kind of go for different structures based on what they want to see from a team dynamic or some other things. So we'd love to kind of, put that out into the room for folks to kind of hear how you guys think about it.
Yeah. We tend to be more of a back of house, kind of chef driven concept. So we kind of have a pretty, I wouldn't say an even split, but we have 40% back of house, 60% front of house. And then for the back of house, it tends to be a little bit easier, where that 40% is then split, essentially evenly based on the amount of hours input into that pool for that day. And we do it daily as opposed to like weekly, like some places do. And then front of house is a little bit more complicated, just because each position, of course, will generate a slightly different percentage of tip revenue for the pool. So, we break it down from a position standpoint. Certain places, certain positions will carry a different weight. And that is where Tip House for us was really, really helpful in being able to manage that process a little bit easier and definitely make the process less prone for error. So we were able to go in with you guys at Tip House and kind of create the tip pool exactly the way we wanted it to look. And it's really kind of like a one step, like point and shoot sort of solution. Tip House picks up all the data from our point of sale. We enter in the cash tips, that's it. And from there, it just generates the distribution breakdown. So it really couldn't be any easier in terms of, distributing the tips and managing time. The whole process is pretty simple. Great.
What about you, Kevin? What kind of rules do you have?
Yeah. Well, first, just to double dip on Brock, not for this call to be salesy or whatever, but Tip House did what we wanted to do, not what Tip House wanted to do. And I thought that was really cool. It's like, no, this is what we want. How can you guys make that happen? And that's what the end result was. So first off, that was amazing. So thank you. So we do 5% total, and it's off of sales, total sales. So 2% to the heart of house, which is the kitchen, 2% to the bartender, mixo, and then 1% to the support team. So host, busters, expos, off of the servers sales that they make. We have a kind of a total team philosophy, and that thought that, the server may be taking care of the table, but the food doesn't get there without a cook. Right. And so, that's our breakdown. That's our distribution. And that's what we've been doing from the beginning. And then so that dollar amount, then at the end of the day on Monday when we do payroll, just goes on their check as kind of a tip, but additional wages. And so that's the breakdown that we use and how we implement it.
Do you also use kind of the same hours worked breakdown within those different parts of the of the house?
Yeah, exactly. So goes total hours, and then you worked 40 hours. So what percentage of that total hours, and then you get that percentage. So yes, it's broke down by hours worked. So the more hours you work, the more tips you'll end up getting. The dollar amount's the same, but you'll just end up getting more of that share. And again, complicated, but this system does it for us. And so it makes it really easy. So it's like, all right, here's the number. This is what I'm going to plug in.
Let's put some numbers to that. I know you guys have been really kind and helped us with some case studies and whatnot around what your experiences have been. But like, in terms of the simplification of the process of like, you know, payroll and that kind of stuff, maybe the kind of before and after view of, you know, how payroll was simplified or you know, time that was saved by kind of shifting from the spreadsheet manual processes to something that's more automated.
Yeah, I mean, at one point in time, payroll was kind of like an all-day event, it felt like. You know, it was something that I sort of dreaded. You know, yeah, I mean, I would literally walk into the office, sit down, and start pulling numbers and entering things into a spreadsheet. And, you know, you're kind of making your list and checking it twice, so to speak. You know, you're running the numbers and making sure that everything matches up. And sure enough, you know, you get to a point where you make one mistake and you have to go back and start over. So yeah, it really was sort of an all day process at one point in time, particularly when we had a larger team. You know, like there was at one point in time, we had over, you know, 50, 60 employees at that one location, and it was pretty cumbersome. So take that to today, and payroll is maybe an hour of my time at the most. It's literally just like a bullet point on a to-do list on every Wednesday of my week. So it's super simple, and it's an easy tool now where if I weren't doing it anymore and I wanted to pass it off to somebody else, it would be just as simple as a few hours of training them, showing them the ropes. So yeah, it's really completely simplified the whole entire process, and not only save time, but of course that translates to money as well.
Yeah. So, not different, pretty much the same as what Brock said. I guess the thing that I would add is that, you know, as you make an error, when you're entering numbers, the time on the back end is, well, it takes time, but also breaks trust with the team. And so that's something that you can't necessarily get back. It's like, well, we'll make it right. Yeah, here's, you know, we're going to write you a check, even though we actually paid Brock more and paid Steve less, but we're still going to write Steve a check. So it just breaks trust. And then just the tracking or the going backwards is kind of invaluable, and the trust is invaluable. So that was it. That's the only thing I would add, is that that has been non-existent now, because it's just, here's the number that we just plug in, and it's transparent, so the person can, the team member can see it, the manager can see it, and so that has been a time saving, a trust builder, lack of headaches, all the things that you all know, if you've done it before, when you've done it, it's like, man, this is just a pain in the butt. So that's the only thing that I would add to what Brock said.
And you know, we're all looking for more time in our day, right? Like anything that can give you hours back, whether it's to be on the floor or coaching your teams or, you know, be with your family or anything else that's adding value to your life. Yeah. So with that in mind, I mean, are there other areas within your business where you think like there's automation or tools that you've seen that are potentially you're interested in or exploring for your business kind of beyond this specific conversation?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, Steve, as you've been in the restaurant before, we've explored the guest led or QR code ordering before, as an automated system. And during the pandemic, we heavily relied on that, but have definitely kind of walked it back towards more of a traditional, service model as of lately. Where that ends up, you know, as we discussed prior to this webinar, is kind of yet to be seen. I think, you know, the changes that we'll see, at least here in Seattle, coming up in 2025, will definitely be an indicator of where automation goes. But I think, you know, as far as like what I would like to see, anything that especially like on the back end of operating, like in the office, allows us to be more efficient and get myself or my team members out of the office and back on the floor is kind of the key to our success, right? Like, I think we want to be on the floor as much as we can and be out of the office and be out with our guests and our teams. So any tools that we get that allow us to do that more efficiently is what we're looking for in the future. And then if the guest led, you know, table side ordering ends up becoming, you know, a more valuable tool than what it is right now, that's something that we'll continue to explore. So, yeah.
Yeah, the order and pay at the table would be an awesome thing if it was totally frictionless, but there's still some kinks that everybody's got to work out. I'm excited for it, and I wish that it would be frictionless and there'd be more adoption around it, because there's that good equation of service and hospitality. So how do you create that service element of being easy, quicker for the guests, but still be there to take care of their needs and be hospitable for them? To be determined, and when that will the technology will catch up to what us as hospitality folks really want and need, and also guess what they want. But then other than that, I think the ordering side and the production side, so writing prep lists and then ordering food from your food purveyor, we are working on something more in-house of just an automated ordering from a par level that you set. This is what you have, this is what you should order. We used a third party and it didn't learn as well as we thought it would be, and you know, didn't catch up to things as quickly as we thought. So we kind of built our own little system, and we recently just rolled that out, and so it saves time with ordering. From your Cisco or whoever you use, and it's actually a little bit more accurate as well. So we've enjoyed that. The second part of that is how do you write good production lists and prep lists for the line cooks, and that's kind of the next step that we'll be looking to make more automated for our team.
That's interesting. Yeah, and I just got back from a little conference, and that was an area of conversation where there was like, you know, here's the like. There's technology tools now, either ones that you build or some that are, you know, trying to be off the shelf, that can take you from here's what you should order to here's what you should prep to even here's a text message to your prep cook that shows them what they're supposed to be prepping that day before they even get in, or like that kind of, like, so there's some really interesting technologies coming that just sort of make things just a little bit easier over the course of a day, as opposed to, you know, interrupting or like all this talk of AI and that kind of stuff is interesting, but like, I'm not going to work with a robot. Like, that's not interesting. That's not hospitality. Anyways, so that's a personal aside.
Yeah, and then on the AI point, sorry, and it's kind of derail or not on the topic, but the AI is something that for me, I'm not familiar with or don't really even know or haven't even tried. But what we have used it for is we do bi-yearly trust surveys, and so, you know, we have 1,000 team members and they provide us a trust survey. Well, we inputted that information into AI. It's like, hey, what are some common themes or what are some main themes? And so instead of reading through, well, you can, and some people do read through 100 responses, it takes out kind of the big central themes or the things that people have said. And so from a process that was like a 2-day, hey, how do I catch up on this trust survey? Now it's a copy and paste, spits out some information. I could read a 3-page Word document, you know, in 20 minutes. And I have a general understanding of what the survey said. And so I think that is something that we've utilized AI for. And I'm sure there's way more that people on the call have used, but that was the one interesting thing that we've stumbled upon.
There is obviously and I want to get to questions here, and we've got a few in the chat, but before we do, obviously there's a big bump in minimum wage coming in Seattle particularly, but it, you know, with the inflation numbers and whatnot statewide as well, How are you guys thinking about these changes? Are you making any specific changes yourselves? What does this look like for you guys?
Yeah, you know, we've obviously, like a lot of places, have been anticipating these changes. You know, when the initial labor rate changes or the tables were released, you know, we knew that 2025 was going to go up to whatever it was going to be, you know, 1997 at a minimum. We know it's now going to be higher than that, of course. So it's something we've been planning for and anticipating. And in some cases, it's not news anyways, because it goes up every year regardless, right? So we've always kind of built a practice of, you know, being mindful of that. This is a significant increase this year, of course. So as far as what we're doing, you know, in 2025, you know, we'll be mindful of our pricing and, you know, how we're vetting our vendors and our suppliers and the relationships we have out there, and kind of leveraging those relationships to meet our goals. But we'll also, you know, be very mindful of how we operate and be more efficient, you know, leaning into tools like Tip House that can automate systems and processes for us. So, you know, you'll see prices go up for sure. I think, you know, some places are going to do surcharge. We're actually hopefully going to avoid doing a surcharge. And that's really just from the perspective of kind of putting ourselves in the seat of our guest and how the optics of that might look to them. That may change though, you know, so who knows? I think eventually we'll kind of find a common ground in the market where everyone's doing something relatively similar, and we might see it be kind of wide in terms of what everyone's approach is, and then it'll kind of get more narrow and more common. So we're essentially just going to kind of go our own way until, you know, we find a better way. But yeah, I think, again, being mindful of pricing, leveraging relationships, being more efficient with our processes and procedures, and then really just kind of watching that bottom line and being mindful of our P&L, you know, finding areas to improve always. So, yeah, nothing out of the ordinary for us, really.
Just a day in the office.
Yep.
Yeah. Like we'd say with like that, hey, there's going to be a bunch of stuff that people are going to try. It's like, all right, when everything settles down, what's the common theme for most people? But I think for us, what we've done since that table came out, same thing. We've moved all of our salary managers to hourly, except the general manager in each one of the restaurants. But so they're all on, oh no, I'm sorry. Everybody's on hourly wages. And it was that push, you know, we got a lot of feedback of work-life balance, and it's like, hey, how do you create work-life balance for folks? And, you know, that's an interesting statement because it's different for everybody. You know, Steve's work-life balance is different than mine. But how can we create a system or a process where you work 45 hours a week? And so, yeah, you get 5 hours of overtime. But you're here, so we want to pay you for that. And then there are times in the industry where you got to work 60. Hopefully it's short-lived, but we want to pay you for the work that you're doing, not take advantage of the stuff that, you know, your own salary, so you can work 70 hours and it's good for the company. Also, it's not necessarily good for that team member. So if you work more, we pay you more. But then there are times where it's like, hey, I'm, you know, want to go on vacation. I'm going to work 30 hours this week and take a extended weekend or something along those lines. And so we found that to be helpful. And there's a balance there still. So that, you know, manager salary line or labor line on the P&L, you still have to make sure that it's consistent, which in years past. But we found it beneficial from a team member standpoint. And then the other piece is, you know, taking a price increase. And so we do a menu survey to see how our prices line up against our competitors. See where we're at, maybe talk to them, see what they're doing. But at the end of the day, minimum wage is increasing a percentage. I think it's like 2.5% So we got to look at our menu to see what we can do to maybe not necessarily do 2.5% maybe do 2.5% to see where our competitors are at, but take a menu increase.
Yeah, no, that those got to use all the tools. It's gonna be interesting. All right, so I guess first question, typical split of tips between front and back of house. So Brock, you said you were 60-40. Is that right?
Yeah, 60% retained by the front of house, 40% to the back of house. And then yeah, the back of house keeps that 40 essentially, and then the front of house, like I said, it splits it based on the position. So not that different really at the end of the day from like a lot of other, like more, I guess, traditional tip pool models. It just initially breaks down a little bit differently. Yeah.
And that was, back in 23, that was the structure we had at ESR, was 60-40 as well. But yeah, that's to your point, that's an aggressive split for a lot of folks. I'd say, what we see just in our own data is, typically more, something in the 70-30, 75-25 as a kind of a more typical split in a lot of cases. But then it depends on what you're doing with wage as well.
Yeah.
So it's more about total compensation, like what's the package.
Yeah, I was going to add to that. I think a lot of people, the secondary question, of course, would be, well, what are you paying your back of house employees, and are you essentially, using that aggressive tip structure? And we actually, we're paying everybody pretty well above minimum wage. Would say that their total compensation is at or above whatever the market standard would be. But again, a lot of it's just because our model tends to be a heavy back of house led concept. So it for us, it just makes the most sense. Those back of house team members are really contributing quite a bit to the overall success of the day-to-day sales.
I concur. The food's great.
Thank you.
Kevin, so you said yours is 5% of server sales. What's kind of a, across your location, I'm sure there's a range, but what's kind of a typical tip percentage on the bill?
Yeah, so we've seen tip over the last few years, tip percentage go up, increase. So somewhere between 20 and 22% for servers. So 5% of that, goes to, or gets distributed through the restaurant. So servers are going to, if they're making 20% tips from their total check, they'll walk out around 15%. And then of that, 20%, 2% goes to the heart of house, 2% goes to the bartender, 1% goes to the support team. So we're not a total tip pool. And Brock, are you guys a total tip pool?
Yeah, we are.
Interesting. So, I mean, I guess what's interesting, Kevin, about your version. So you're doing it, and this is, not to dig into the complexity of our system. This is one of the beauties, is you can have rules that are completely different because of the flexibility of the way you can build them, just like an Excel spreadsheet, pretty much. But yours is based on sales, right? So you're taking a percentage of sales and almost guaranteeing, off of this top line of sales, this number is going to the back of house or heart of house bartenders and support. And then whatever over and above that, the server makes, they keep.
Yep.
And
yep,
do you're they, exactly right. Are you doing it, they it's like they keep what they make, or is it a pool in the front of house as well?
No, they keep what they make. So, yeah, and that was one thing that we tested when we were doing order and pay at the table. We tested that for a little bit of kind of a total tip pool. So it's like, hey, everybody contributes to the service and hospitality of their guests, or of the guests in the restaurant, not of your section or this is my table. And because it was such a switch or different from what we do, when you talked about roadblocks or things that were challenging, that was much more challenging. We did share the data, we tracked the information, and they weren't making less money, they were making more, but it was just different. But that was a hill to climb for sure. So it was, yeah.
I mean, anytime you change the way you do things, people are, their knee jerk is, this is going to be bad for me, right? Like that's the first instinct, even if like by the math, it's not. Second one. Yeah, we got an election coming up. You're not wrong. And both have talked about not taxing tips, which is true. In terms of the way that this, and you know, I guess this is more of a question to me in some ways, but it doesn't really actually change much for us here at Tip House. If devil will be in the details of something that gets implemented, if it ever does. But the way we view things is it may change the way people compensate and what tips look like and the number of industries that may implement tips and that kind of stuff beyond the traditional hospitality world. You know, it would still run through your W-2, but it would be showing up as tip income that you wouldn't be taxed on as opposed to your you know, wages, which would get income tax. So who knows how it'll get implemented, but I will say it's been beneficial for us because it puts tips in everybody's mind as a topic to talk about and makes this a conversation for folks.
Just
next
to
one.
Add to that, but, just to add to that. So we are tips on check. And so when it talks about your W-2 or, you know, your paycheck, it, as we transition to tips on check, and I'm sure more and more restaurants are already doing this, but it allowed the servers, bartenders, hosts to show higher incomes. And so in the past, where it was cash, they'd go to get a car loan or a home loan. It's like my income is 35,000, 40,000, but I'm really making 80 or 65,000. But it didn't show up on their W-2 or their paycheck. So it was harder for folks to get loans just to, you know, buy a car. Now that that is all visible, transparent for people who are wanting to get loans, it's making it easier for folks to get a loan for a car, get a loan for a house, those types of things.
Yeah, and go get qualify for renting an apartment or something like that more easily. Yeah, no, absolutely. Next question around sort of some functionality. This is a deep in the weeds question as far as Tip House works, but I can actually answer it directly. We have a feature that's unique to us, and I think we've got a patent around, if I'm not mistaken, called time of service. So basically the system goes in and looks at every single check from when it was open to when it was closed. It looks at the people that were working during those minutes, and then it allocates the tip based on minutes worked during the time the check was open. And so you can distribute the tip, and we find typically groups that have multiple day parts or you know, lots of, you know, in and outs in terms of like people coming on and off the clock and whatnot. They typically utilize this particular feature, which is proprietary to us, to handle those types of situations where you're getting the tips for the times you're working. And if you're not on the clock, you know, you're not in the pool for those tips at that time. So a very specific feature to answer that exact scenario that you highlighted.
And to that question, so that is a massive, or it's a huge kind of, not necessarily selling point, but a perk, because bartenders are the ones that either benefit from that or don't benefit from the times that they're clocked in and clocked out. Because for us, you know, they get a percentage of those sales and they get a percentage of the drinks that they make from the tips of the table that they made a drink for. But during that shift transition time, that's where that, what Steve was talking about, is extremely beneficial because it does break it up by the minute. So if you clock out at 3:43, everything that you've worked till 3:43 will go on your check as a tip. So that is awesome for the bartenders, as opposed to it's like, oh, well, sorry, you left and they haven't closed their checkout yet. So, or you aren't here, you just got here and this table's been here for 20 minutes. It's really beneficial. So that rule is awesome for the bartenders specifically.
Yeah, I would also just add on another thinking point to that question is, if as an operator, you're seeing this as a kind of common issue or problem, I would really, you know, advise that you start like analyzing kind of your labor data. You probably have some opportunities, if this is happening consistently, to adjust in times on your schedule to kind of mitigate some of these issues. We've had that same exact experience before, and we found that being a little bit more efficient with scheduling, pushing people's in times back even 15, 30 minutes here and there, really kind of mitigate some of those issues. And you can kind of redistribute the labor load in terms of like side work or even just, you know, customer touch points and kind of resolve a lot of those problems internally. And in addition to that, you know, not only are you then being more fair in terms of like who's earning tips, you'll find that, you know, your total labor costs goes down really significantly. It's amazing what 15 to 30 minutes in labor savings will do for your overall labor costs. So, you know, in addition to the tools that Tip House has to mitigate that, I think really getting very analytical with how you approach scheduling and everything can mitigate some of those issues as well.
Absolutely. So in terms of how the system works, yes, we have direct API integrations with pretty much every point of sale system. Brock, I know you're on Union. Kevin, I think you're on Toast. Is that right?
Yep, okay. We're on Toast.
Yep, so two great partners of ours that we've got good integrations with, and we've got pretty much any POS that's going to be on this call, I'm pretty sure we're going to integrate with it. So that was a lot of work that our development team did to create that automation. Really, it's like you can't, if you're not pulling the data directly out of the source of record, you're not going to be able to automate the process. And then on the back end, we create custom upload files for payroll. So it's a few clicks and all your tips are up on the checks if that's how you handle it. Tip House. I don't know. Do you guys deduct credit card fees for tips paid by credit card?
We do, yes. Yeah. So yeah, to answer that question, Tip House does allow for that.
Yeah, so there's just a field you can set based on, you know, your typical credit card percentage, and we'll pull that out and we'll make that transparent to Kevin's point. Like, it's right in the employee app. It'll show you the credit card deduction fee so that people understand exactly what's happening with the money.
And we do as well.
Great. All right. Well, that's the Q&A. Gentlemen, it has been a pleasure, as always, to spend some time with you. You know, next time, beer's on me at your establishments. Would love to, if anybody wants to, you know, spend some time and learn a bit more, just hit the QR code link I popped up. And hopefully this was informational and gave you guys some ideas for what you're doing inside your own businesses. But Kevin, Brock, can't thank you both enough for your time, your partnership, and for being, you know, amazing customers and evangelists for Tip House.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you to all three of you for taking the time out and spending some time with our members. And once again, this will be up on our website probably about lunchtime today. So if you missed anything and you want to take another look at it, check out our website, wahospitality.org. And thank you all, and have a great afternoon.
Thanks for listening to the Washington Hospitality Industry Podcast. Make sure to visit our website, wahospitality.org, where you can learn more about the restaurant and lodging industries and the Washington Hospitality Association. Be sure to subscribe to the show in iTunes, Google, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Thank you so much for that effort. Until next time.